Here at Yours, Mine and Femme, we acknowledge the traditional owners and custodians of the land of which we broadcast, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation.
We pay respects to the elders past and present, always was and always will be Aboriginal land. Are tuned in to 2SER 107.3. And this is the third ep of Yours, Mine and Femme, a show where we explore femininity outside of the patriarchy. We're your hosts, Beth Tracy and the wonderful Bella Mitchie. Now today we're diving deep into the debilitating chronic illness that is endometriosis. And we're talking about the realities of living with it. It affects one in nine women in Australia, costs about $9.7 billion per year to the Australian economy, and it is so much more than just a painful period.
Now, if you don't know, endometriosis is often a painful disorder which happens when tissue similar to the lining of the uterus grows outside the uterus. The symptoms of this condition can be debilitating. They can include nausea, fatigue, painful periods, heavy bleeding, and so much more. On today's show, I spoke with Endometriosis Australia to get a picture of the impact this disease has on everyday sufferers. We're talking things like what kind of impact this can have in the workplace, financial costs, and the current state of government funding.
But what about the actual experience of dealing with such a debilitating chronic illness? I caught up with comedian Anissa Beer, who has publicly come out with her story of living with endometriosis in the form of her show Lethally Blonde, which unfortunately, due to medical issues, had to be cancelled. It took Anissa 17 years and seven doctors to actually be diagnosed with endo, a road that so many women and people with uteruses have had to go down to get some answers. So we unpack it all. As always, we've also got some great music coming your way, including this track from Melbourne's own Wet Kiss. This is Sister Duress.
But my sister isn't in it at all.
You're tuned in to Yours, Mine and Femme on 2SER 107.3 FM, where your hosts Beth Tracy and myself, Bella Mitchie. Now, to get a better picture of what life is like living with endometriosis, I had a chat with Donna Cheecher from Endometriosis Australia. Take a listen. Let's talk about the reality of working while suffering from endometriosis. To be honest, it sounds pretty grim. In fact, when I was doing my research, I found out that it's estimated that endometriosis costs around $9.7 billion each year to the Australian economy. And most of these costs come from lost productivity at work. As concisely as you can you just paint me a picture of what it's like being in the workforce with endometriosis and what needs to be done to support sufferers in the workplace?
Well, I think endometriosis has such a broad spectrum. So there are some people that struggle every day with endometriosis. There are some that struggle every month with endometriosis. And there are some people that can go along in their life as normal. They often seem to be the minority, but it is a broad spectrum of symptoms and impacts. But we have done some research with Endometriosis Australia and Western Sydney University and Southern Cross University, and that kind of gave us a little snapshot of what's happening out in the workforce for those living with endometriosis. And, you know, 70% of patients had to take unpaid leave and time off work just to manage their endometriosis symptoms. And that could include also attending medical appointments. So I think, you know, understanding how, you know, different industries would be really challenging for people with endometriosis. And so I think it depends on, you know, what your workplace is like and how accepting they are. And if you've been able to have a chat to your employer about what you're going through. So I find that the responses we've got from our research is that it has had a very big impact in general on endometriosis patients. 1 in 3 have been passed over for promotion and 1 in 6 have lost their jobs due to endometriosis.
So with that in mind, despite this being a chronic disease, there's not really any kind of structures in place to kind of protect sufferers from the impact it can have to, say, on their career paths?
No, currently there is nothing specific for endometriosis. But Endometriosis Australia are doing more research. So we've just had a research call out yesterday and it's called Endo at Work. And that's also with Western Sydney University, UTS in Sydney and Southern Cross. And it's looking at how we can develop policies from both the employer's perspective and the patient's perspective. And so this is an online survey that got launched yesterday. So it's a second part to the research project that we're doing so that we can come up with specific policies and procedures that organisations can put in place so that business owners aren't impacted. And also it's to the benefit of the patient. You know, is there some small things that we can put into place that makes it easier for everyone to function better and to be productive at work?
Can you just quickly give me an example of what one of those small things might be?
You know, the first research gave up a couple of things, and, you know, we did it from the work from home basis. So has the COVID-19 pandemic and that working from home where a lot of work got shifted on an online basis and people could work from home, and did that make it easier for people to manage their endometriosis? And 90% of the respondents found that flexibility in relation to time management and working from home was the most important factor to improving their their work life with endometriosis. So 90% is pretty huge, but they might be things like a 20-minute rest period or access to healthcare benefits or access to healthcare services such as counselling and mindfulness and things like that, or even physical aids such as ergonomic chairs, heat packs, that type of thing for the workplace.
We're going to go to a song now, but when we come back, we'll hear about the realities of the financial costs endometriosis can have and the current state of government funding. This is Signal Your Love from System Olympia.
by me.
You're tuned in to Yours, Mine and Femme on 2SER 107.3 FM. And so today we're talking about the realities of living with endometriosis. I asked Donna Chicha from Endometriosis Australia about how much this condition can cost individuals, as well as the current state of government funding. Take a listen.
You've mentioned earlier that a lot of sufferers need to take unpaid leave. Tell me about the financial costs of the disease to the sufferers. In my research, I heard one sufferer shared her experience where she, despite Medicare and private health insurance, she was still out of pocket between $3,000 and $5,000. Can you break down some of the costs that this can have?
Yeah, I'd have to agree with her. You know, living with endometriosis myself over the years, it has cost a substantial amount of money, and that's including private healthcare and Medicare support. You've got things like pelvic pain physiotherapy that you might have. There might be medical, the gap payments with your medical appointments, such as your GP or your specialist. And there also might be things like you might have complementary stuff that you do, like acupuncture or osteopathy or having a massage, different things that you use to help manage your symptoms. They all end up costing quite a considerable amount of money, and they just add up over time. And so you're challenged both trying to maintain a job, progress within that job. So we know that there is, you know, one in three were passed over for promotion. So if you can't progress, you can't earn more. And then you've got the impact of those actual costs of living with the disease. So is it buying medications? Is it buying any of those ergonomic things, like, you know, I don't know about every other endo warrior out there, but the amount of heat packs that I've gone through just to help manage living with endometriosis, you know, it all adds up.
No, definitely. And speaking of that, with the 2022-23 budget, a record $58 million will be provided under the National Action Plan for Endometriosis to improve things like diagnosis and primary care support. What does this mean for sufferers?
I think the sufferers, whilst it's a great, it's been a great investment. So since 2018, we've had collectively around $80 million invested into the industry or into the sector. And it's really hard to translate that to the everyday person on the street. So they're all infrastructure things that are putting in place for the long-term care and management. Patients are slowly starting to see things roll out, like from the National Action Plan. In the first cohort, there's been the education programs going into schools and things like that that are now starting to roll out around the country. That was trialed in certain states and now they're rolled out around the country. So they're all really good things, but does it help the hip pocket of the individual? Not at this stage. So whilst $58 million in the recent investment is a really good thing, we have a long way to go. It's the small investment in considering the size of $9.7 billion each year that the disease costs the economy, including indirect and direct healthcare costs to the patient.
Right. No, definitely. When you compare those two numbers, it really does kind of seem like a droplet in a lake. Just to wrap up, what would you like to see moving forward, whether that be in terms of frameworks or, you know, government funding, research, financial support? What more needs to be done to help those suffering with this disease?
Endometriosis is like the Mount Everest size of problems. So we're still at a little tiny hill or a bump at this stage in what we've achieved. So there's still so much we've got to do to help patients for now and patients in the future with endometriosis. There's a couple of things like the GP centres that are talked about in the $58 million. I think that's a great start. And within the National Action Plan, there's centres of excellence or endometriosis care centres that are looking to come into the tertiary hospitals and like an outpatient. So, you know, that's part of the first National Action Plan, and we're still working on that. And I think that to me would be a great thing, because it doesn't matter what your socioeconomic status, you will get equally the best treatment. And it'll be a multidisciplinary care centre. So, you know, that's my wish anyway. I think we have to see more investment in research. And whilst patients on the ground, often it's hard because you need something to help you here and now, the research will else actually help establish the best path forward and what the greatest impact we can get for the investment. So if we're going to find out what causes endometriosis, what's the best treatments for endometriosis, how can we cure it or how can we prevent it, we're going to need some serious funding and serious investment into endometriosis research in the long term.
Quite a lot to take in right there. Beth, what's your takeaway?
Look, for me, the most baffling thing were the statistics that she mentioned. 70% of patients had to take leave and time off work, 1 in 6 losing their job to endo, and multiple people losing out on promotions. It's really staggering. And, you know, I myself have been struggling with reproductive health issues over the past 2 years. I have not yet, unfortunately, reached my diagnosis, but I've had to take time off of work from it, even from 2SE, because of the chronic pain that I experience almost day to day. And I've, you know, there's been times where I've had to work through it because I needed the paychecks. Even times where I was so ill that I fainted on shift from the pain. That actually happened.
That's horrific.
Yeah. And the thing is that when you're at work, because it's such an internal and invisible illness, people aren't really taking it seriously. And because it's related to periods and your period pain, potentially, I don't think that it really clicks in people's minds, and which is not their fault. You know, there's not a lot of education about it out there, except for what, you know, Endometriosis Australia is doing, which is amazing.
No, they're doing great work. But as you said, because it's associated with, you know, period cramps and such, a lot of people may not realize what they're doing, but
exactly,
they kind of diminish it.
For sure.
When you read what sufferers have gone through, it is just so debilitating. It takes such a toll on a person. And you mentioned your struggles with finding an answer. Mm. When I was talking to Donna, I think around at the moment, the average diagnosis time is roughly just over 6 years.
Goodness gracious.
However, just to put that into context as to how far we've actually come, when I spoke to Donna, she said it took her over 17 years to get a proper diagnosis, a proper answer.
17
Imagine
years.
That's almost like the life of an adult.
Yeah.
Like wondering for all that time, like what's going on, mm-hmm, with your body.
100%. And it's such an overlooked chronic health issue. It affects you not only physically, but as well as we found out in that discussion, is financially, mentally, it takes a toll. And so having those resources that she mentioned available at the workplace, like counseling, physical aid, 20-minute breaks if you need it, if they're needed, I think would be so beneficial and take off the mental load that comes with having endometriosis when you're a woman or a person with a uterus trying to also work and support yourself.
Oh, without a doubt. Donna mentioned in our chat that at the moment, Endometriosis Australia are doing some research now, a survey called Endo at Work, which hopefully will bring more answers, mm-hmm, because as mentioned before, we need policies that specifically target this disease, and not only just for sufferers, but for businesses as well, so they don't lose these incredible workers just because they don't know how to provide support. Little things like flexible working from home, half at home, half in the office.
Having heating packs at the office. Like
those little breaks, you know, they can make such a difference.
And those endo care centres that she spoke about at the tail end there sound like a brilliant idea. And I hope that they actually move forward with that, the government moves forward with that and prioritises it, because you'd be met with validation and help to support you through your pain rather than being met with, you know, a circus act of trying to actually find a diagnosis and getting help, you know, that exists sort of now. That's sort of how I feel about it.
And that's probably an aspect that is often overlooked. Not only is the disease take such a toll on the sufferer physically, but that not knowing, not being able to find answers, that's got to do some damage to your mental health.
You know, feeling slightly gaslit about your symptoms that you have, and you know that you're not waking up every day.
It's not normal.
Feeling like, and you know, it's just a lot, you know, and Exactly. Being turned away from multiple doctors over multiple years will just eventually make you want to give up, and it can really contribute to a poor mental health. So when we come back, actually, we'll be diving into comedian Anissa B's personal journey with endo. She's faced a lot of these issues throughout her journey with endometriosis, and 17 years it also took her to find a diagnosis.
That's a very specific number. Yeah.
And it was very interesting that both of the people that we've spoken to, 17 years it took them. But, you know, we're going to delve into it. We'll delve into it very soon after this track from the Dianas. This is Visions. Tuned into 2SER with myself, Beth Tracy, and of course, Bella Michie. You're listening in to Yours, Mine and Femme, and we're speaking about endometriosis. If you know someone with endometriosis, chances are you know it's difficult to deal with, to say the least. For women and people with uteruses suffering with reproductive medical issues, the road to diagnosis is almost always a treacherous one, met with countless obstacles and gaslighting. I caught up with comedian Anissa B, who has publicly shared her own traumatic experience with endo in a comedy special, Lethally Blonde, that has, since we recorded this interview, unfortunately been cancelled due to health issues. But nonetheless, we dive into her experience. Take a listen. We're talking about a very real issue for a lot of women. The subject matter that you're covering, of course, is something that is unquestionably impactful on the lives of thousands of women around the world. 1 in 9 women, in fact, grapple with endometriosis in their lifetime. And the road to diagnosis, it really seems like for many women an uphill battle. You yourself had been misdiagnosed for 17 years. Where did your own journey with endometriosis start, and how did this whole journey impact you day to day?
Well, first of all, can I just say, for any endometriosis sufferers out there, it sucks. It sucks. It sucks uterus, really, at the end of the day. I wish I could say it sucks balls, but it sucks uterus. So when I started menstruating, having my period, I noticed a lot of pain. And I started quite young, as I think a lot of like the generations moving forward seem to be. And I guess there's this weird association with periods that like they're meant to be painful.
Yeah.
So, and you don't know anyone else's feeling. You don't know anyone else's experience, right? You only know your own body.
Exactly.
So I just kept told, oh, have a Panadol, have this, you know, just put a heat pack on it or whatever it might be. And I thought, oh no, this is like, this makes me feel sick. Like this actually makes me feel ill. And it wasn't until like my mid-20s when I noticed that I would bleed while I ovulate and I would get severe pain when I ovulate. I was like, there's something going on here. Like this isn't a normal process. So I went through 7 different doctors when I was in my mid-20s. Yeah.
My God.
I was misdiagnosed. I had what they test for, hormone replacement therapy. So I did hormone replacement therapy for a while. A couple of doctors didn't know what was wrong with me. They thought it was gut issues. Then there was, because of course, if anyone out there does have endo, you know that it's very close to your bowels and your intestines. So it does, you know, affect that area downstairs as well. So there's so many other, which I understand, there's so many other issues that are probably more prevalent in today's society that doctors kind of turn to first, which I totally understand. But it also shows you how little they know about the female body and how it all works. So essentially, I got misdiagnosed. I got to a point where I was told I have chronic fatigue. I was deemed medically unfit to work. I had to go on Centrelink in my mid-20s. Mid-20s, when you're meant to be out there doing amazing things. And I finally got to see a gynecologist that I got referred to. And it was a female gynecologist. And she insinuated that I was making it up.
Are you serious?
I am not joking. Serious, I am deadly serious. I am not joking. That's what I was trying to say
that
there.
That just makes my blood boil, honestly.
Yeah. Being a young woman, we're constantly told, don't make a scene. Don't do this. Don't upset people.
You're overreacting.
So in my head, you're overreacting. So in my head, I thought, oh my God, you know, I could be psychosymptomatic. Like maybe I'm crazy. So I shut down and I didn't tell anyone about my pain.
How long did that go on for?
It went on for a while. I got into group fitness teaching and exercise, got really into it, like started doing bodybuilding and all sorts of stuff.
Wow.
And my parents didn't understand it, like why I was doing that. And all I remember thinking was it just makes my body feel good. And it turns out later, now that I've got the correct diagnosis and I was talking to my specialist about it, he goes, no wonder you exercise so much, because exercise is a natural pain suppressant for endometriosis. Mm-hmm. So I was killing myself with exercise by like training 7 hours a day.
Wow.
And teaching and being physical in order for me to help manage my chronic pain.
Being healthy
is sometimes not being healthy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, for sure. For sure. And can we just, you know, as you were talking about that, obviously it stuck out to me, 7 different doctors. And obviously you had said that you had to go on Centrelink. I wanted to touch on that a little bit more. The costs of receiving diagnosis for women's health issues, because it's so intense. I heard that in Australia, on average, it costs $30,000 per person, per sufferer a year in lost work productivity and in direct health costs. How did you navigate that in your 20s? Because it sounds like a nightmare.
It's an absolute nightmare. I mean, I was very fortunate that I grew up in a medical family.
Right.
So one, being given the correct advice as to kind of who to turn to or who to go talk to was an easy and active discussion within my life. So that was great. So I've had a lot of free advice in that capacity. But other than that, my parents highly suggested from a very young age to get onto private health insurance. Now, I know that's not affordable or accessible to everybody. But for me, because I knew I had something going on, I didn't know what the answer was. But, you know, at the very least, I thought, if I am crazy, I'm going to need this for therapy sessions. So yeah, I have utilized that a lot. But in saying that, like, it has cut into my life a lot. Mm. Like, I don't have maybe the savings that I would like to have. You know, I don't have the investments that I would like to have, because every bit of savings and every bit of investment has kind of gone back into managing my condition. Mm. So, you know, I did get harshly judged by a date once, saying like, well, your savings aren't very high. And I thought,
excuse me,
let's just say there was a lot of profanities in my head. And I just thought, how dare you judge me when you have no idea the day-to-day that I have to go through in order for me just to function like everybody else.
Exactly.
And not draw attention to, you know, my struggles.
That's an ultimate, like, red flag, straight up. That guy, ugh, honestly. Yeah,
that guy left. That guy is
gone.
Eliminated.
Wow. Okay. A lot to unpack there. We'll continue listening into my conversation with Anissa after this gorgeous track from the gorgeous Japanese trans artist herself, Aturu Nakamura. This is I Like You.
You
listening into Yours, Mine and Femme on 2SER 107.3. And look, we're going to continue listening in to Anissa B's journey with endo after what we heard about the horrific roller coaster that is trying to get a diagnosis. I asked her about the vindication of finally receiving her diagnosis. Take a listen. You know, in saying all of that, obviously it's been a huge journey for you, a huge battle. I feel like it's really safe to assume that the vindication you would have felt once you were actually finally diagnosed with endo would have felt amazing. What was it like when you actually given an answer for it?
I walked into my specialist's office and I sat down and I told him my story. And he's amazing. And the reason why he really started specializing in it was because his wife went through it. So he saw firsthand like how vicious this condition can be. And I told him like how much pain I'd been suffering from a young age and how it would stop me doing certain things and how I couldn't sleep sometimes and how I would have to dress myself on the floor because it would be so painful and all this sort of stuff. And he just said, I truly 100% believe you have endometriosis. And probably adenomyosis, which is another form of the condition, just slightly different. And I cried a lot in that office because it was the first time that I felt like I wasn't being dismissed for my pain. And then I remember going in to have surgery and talking to my mum, and she goes, are you okay? Like, you know, are you scared or whatever? Because this was during COVID. So of course no one could come visit or anything like that. And I said, my biggest fear right now is that they're going to open me up and there's going to be nothing in there. That was my fear. Not like if they could find, you know, the results or the answer.
Not to the extent of what it was affecting you. It was whether or not it was really there. Because it's invisible. You can't see it on the outside.
No, exactly.
And I totally understand how that would have felt. And I'm so glad that you finally got an answer because you deserve it.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I was really excited, you know, when I woke up from surgery and my doctor came out and told me, he's like, Anissa, I just wanted to let you know it was everywhere. Like, you know, and he meant like everywhere. It had moved to my bowel, it moved to my intestines. Like it was crazy. And I cried joy because I knew an answer. Like, you know, it's so baffling to me that something so severe and horrific as to finding out that not just that you have this condition, but also that it was everywhere. And for me to cry happy tears because now I have an answer. Like it was just a very interesting juxtaposition of emotional turmoil almost. Like it was crazy. Going through this space of female health in particular, it's navigating a minefield because you really have to find someone you trust, one, to open up and talk about the things that are going on with you, and two, then to find the right people who kind of know more about that area. Even to this day, they still don't know enough about the condition. They don't know why it happens. They don't know how to treat it. Like the only real treatment that they found, which is effective, is removing the lesions. But even then, it doesn't guarantee that it doesn't come back, you know, and that's another thing. When you're looking at this condition, you know, it's one in nine, you know, women or people with a uterus. Now, I feel like this is just me. When they're over 50% of the world's population is considered female, and one in nine of those are suffering from this, I don't know. I feel like it's a big deal.
It should probably be looked into a bit deeper, you know.
Don't you think?
Just a teensy bit.
So yeah, if anything, you know, my comedy show is essentially all about that and and my experience with that. And I'm hoping to bring more awareness to how prominent this disease, this condition is and how it affects, you know, women and anyone with a uterus on a day-to-day basis.
That was Anissa B talking with myself, walking us through her journey to finally reaching a diagnosis. Bella, what were your thoughts?
Honestly, I just find it slightly ludicrous about how a person or, you know, a healthcare worker needs a personal connection to someone who has suffered endo for it to click and for a doctor to make that kind of diagnosis. Like, not necessarily a criticism on those individual practitioners, excuse me, per se, but that is the current state of healthcare regarding this condition.
Sounds similar to somebody else we know, needing to know a woman in pain to understand.
Yeah,
it.
I feel
but like... we're not going to name names here. No, I totally agree with you. Look, you know, understandably, when she mentioned that, you know, she was had finally found a doctor that believed her, validated her, despite him knowing that his, you know, having that personal connection with his wife, who was also a fellow sufferer. Point of the matter is that he believed her. But the thing is that she was saying that when she was going in for a surgery during lockdown, you know, in the past year or so, the overwhelming feeling that she had within herself before going into the surgery wasn't fear of her like going under or anything like that. It had to do with the fear of there being nothing there because she'd been gaslit for 17 years, you know, dismissed, gaslit, all of that kind of stuff from 7 different doctors, one of which, a female doctor, completely disregarded her and said it was all in her mind and made her think that she was psychosymptomatic.
Just like, adds a bit of salt into the wound just there.
Not a bit, like literally a whole cup of salt into the wounds that you've already been dealing with for 17 years, you know. This has affected her mental health, her physical health, her relationships and her life. And the very fact that she, and it's totally valid that that was her fear and her feelings going into that surgery. But, you know, the question is, you know, one in nine people with uteruses have endometriosis, have some sort of issue with their reproductive organs. So why is this road to diagnosis so difficult? You know, why does it put so many people off from continuing down the path to finding an answer and just allow them to, you know, they'd rather stick with having the pain and suffering with the pain than go down this treacherous road? It's very upsetting. But that being said, there's a lot more to unpack there. We're going to be listening in to the final part of my discussion with Anissa and about her journey and the trauma that she's been through with endometriosis very soon. But to get us there, we're going to go to a song from R.L. Kelly. This is You're Not the Only Monster from Hell.
Thank you.
you're back listening in to Beth and Belle for Yours, Mine and Femme on 2SER 107.3. We're talking about endometriosis this episode. We've been speaking with Anissa B, a comedian and longtime sufferer of endometriosis. We're going to be delving into her final part of our conversation with her. This time we'll be talking about dealing with the trauma. Take a listen. So Lethally Blonde is the show that you're presenting in Sydney Comedy Festival coming up very soon. You unravel, it's amazing. Congratulations, first off, though.
Oh, thank you.
It's awesome. You unravel, as you said, all the internalized and what I can really only deem as trauma from this experience. What made you want to bring your story center stage? And you said that you want to amplify it and, you know, share it with people. How was it also for you to kind of go back through all the strife of your diagnosis and, you know, unpacking so much trauma through this time, a lens of humor?
I think for me, it got to a point where I have been suffering for so long. Mm. And I found, because I personally felt broken for such a long period of time, like I didn't know what was wrong with me. I didn't know, you know, why it was affecting my day to day in so many ways, like social events, you know, just simple things like you may not even consider it, but you know, going to the shops just mm-hmm. to grab some groceries, I have to kind of plan out, like, can I walk there or can I not? Will I have to Uber back because I can't, you know, like stuff like that, just simple things that I have to kind of like take into consideration. Mm-hmm. And I hid it a lot. Like I hid it a lot from my family. I probably only really opened it up to some of my close friends about how my pain was affecting me when it got to a point where it was affecting our relationships. Yeah. And then they could understand where I was coming from. But no, not many people knew, because I was always like bubbly, you know, personality, trying to get everybody happy and joyous. And I think there was a space of empathy there that allowed me to connect with other people's pain, mm-hmm. which I really liked. But it got to a point where I realized that it was just a cover for my own pain and my own trauma in going through this. So as I was kind of coming to the forefront of everything that happened, I just thought, I need to talk about this more. I need to share this more. And all the, I guess embarrassing, how society would deem embarrassing things.
The shame things.
Yeah, the vulnerability. I just thought, you know, we all go through it in different aspects, whether you've got a condition or not, it doesn't matter. It's called being a human being. But for some strange reason, still, we all do it. We all go through these emotions, and yet we still all lie to each other and say that we don't. Yeah. Like, it's so bizarre to me that we've got this sort of idea of righteousness when it comes to emotional health.
Yeah, for sure.
So I thought for myself, I didn't want to feel burdened by trying to hide anything anymore. So I thought, if I can make a joke about it and if I'm okay with it, mm-hmm. then I feel like other people will be more okay about their own stuff.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the point of the show.
Very commendable. Very commendable. Because as you said, I completely agree. People want to wear these facades that everything's okay. And people minimize their own stuff all the time. That's something that my friends and I have been talking about recently, is like, we need to stop minimizing the crap that you've gone through, what you're going through currently, your pain, everything like that. Because as women and people with uteruses, you were told from a young age and conditioned to accept that you were always somewhat going to be uncomfortable in your body, which sucks. And lastly, I just wanted to ask you about some advice. Do you have any suggestions or little golden nuggets of wisdom for other women or people with uteruses out there undergoing their own journey with endo?
You are valuable as a human being. I think when you go through spaces of pain, you know, it affects you in so many ways. It affects your confidence. It affects, you know, your relationships. It affects your day-to-day. And it also affects your mental health. It is so easy to beat yourself up and feel like, you know, you're not worthy and you're lesser than, because your body isn't functioning the way that a medical journal says it should, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think I, for a long time, kind of diminished myself and my value in everyday life because I thought I was defective, you know. And so in speaking with other people who've gone through this condition and how it's affected them in everyday life, and I think anyone with a chronic condition, chronic illness, you are not your pain. You know, you're so much more than your illness, and you're so much more than your condition. And find the right people that completely understand your value beyond your physical form And I know for some people that might sound woo-woo, but at the end of the day, you know, it's really those emotional connections that will drive you forward in life. So your physicality might be limited for some things, but, you know, your emotional depth and your empathy and your willingness to connect with people, like that's what changes lives and that's what impacts people. So please, please don't feel like your worth is valued simply because of your physicality. It's definitely not.
Beautiful, beautiful wise words there from Anissa B. Bella, what were your takeaways from this whole conversation?
I think what stuck most with me in that chat with Anissa is just how heartbreaking it is to think about the impact, as Anissa mentioned, to go through it, especially in your 20s when all your peers, this is, you know, your prime where you're supposed to go out and having fun and being so limited and experiencing such a debilitating condition. Beth, I suppose this may resonate with you if you'd like to share.
Definitely. So one of the reasons why we really wanted to speak on this particular issue is, well, number one, it's such a wide-reaching issue, but I myself over the past couple of years have been dealing with it myself. I have been trying to find a diagnosis for my reproductive health issues that I've been suffering with for about 2 years now, to no avail. You know, as Anissa said, it took her 17 years, as well as Donna, who had also been suffering for 17 years without a diagnosis. It takes a long time to get there. And, you know, it is a very debilitating thing going to a doctor, telling them about your pain. I went to 3 different doctors in the span of 6 months, spent over nearly $2,000 trying to find an answer, got a wrong diagnosis with adenomyosis. Then I went to a specialist and they said that no, it's not adenomyosis, but to find it out, if it really is, you have to spend $600 on this special MRI to get it done. I am in my early 20s. When I'm not at 2SER, I'm working as a hospitality worker. Night work, not very, you know, it's not very reliable work as well. And the very fact of the matter is that financially it's debilitating, mentally it's debilitating, being told that, you know, we can't help you, being put on so many different types of birth control that it makes your hormones go up and down like a roller coaster. It's hard to deal with. So I really appreciate what Endometriosis Australia are doing in trying to, you know, research this more and for, you know, trying to create more awareness around the issue, conducting a lot of research into the matter and, you know, making help more applicable and more available for people.
Yeah, it would be very interesting to see the results of their study, their survey. Hopefully we can find out more how to support sufferers in the workplace. And, you know, with new government funding coming in, people like Anissa and Donna from Endometriosis Australia and all these incredible other endo warriors out there, just hopefully we are making strides in this condition. As you mentioned, Beth, whilst Anissa and Donna, it took them 17 long, frustrating, painful years to get that diagnosis. We've got that average down to 6 years, whilst that's still a ridiculous amount of time to go not knowing. Mm-hmm. It's important to remember that we're getting somewhere.
Of course.
There is hope out there. And yeah. I think that was a really, truly beautiful statement that Anissa said about to all the sufferers out there. Although your physicality may be impacted, that does not determine your worth.
1,000%. Say it again for the people in the back. Well, that was such an amazing episode to delve into such a serious topic. Thank you so much to Anissa B for coming on the show and discussing her very personal journey with me. And thank you very much to Donna Chicha from Endometriosis Australia for joining us on Yours, Mine and Femme to give some more insights into the very issue itself.
If anything throughout this chat may have resonated with you and you'd like to find out more information, head to our website, 2ser.com, where you can find links to resources and more information about endometriosis.
Let us know your thoughts on this episode and give us a follow on Instagram and Twitter at ymf_2ser. We're your hosts, Beth Tracy and Bella Mitchie. See you next Monday.